We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 27, Attack by Chandavega on the City of Puranjana. Text number 6. Tasyam ajanayat putran Puranjanyam Puranjana Shatanyai Karishavira Ayushordam Yatat Yagat. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The great sage Narada then addressed King Prachini Barhishat. Oh, one whose lifespan is great, Virat. In this way, King Puranjana begot 1,100 sons within the womb of his wife. Puranjani, however, in this business, he passed away half of his life. Please repeat. The great sage Narada, then addressed King Prachini Barhishat. Oh, one whose life is great. Virat. Sorry. One whose lifespan is great. Virat. In this way, King Puranjana begot 1,100 sons within the womb of his wife, Puranjani. However, in this business, he passed away half of his lifespan. Purport. In this verse, there are several significant words, the first of which are Ekadasha Shatini. Puranjana had begotten 1,100 sons within the womb of his wife, and thus passed away half of his life. Actually, every man follows a similar process. If one lives for 100 years at the utmost in his family life, he simply begets children up to the age of 50. Unfortunately, at the present moment, people do not live even 100 years. Nevertheless, they beget children up to the age of 60. Another point is that formerly people used to beget 100 to 200 sons and daughters. As will be evident from the next verse, King Puranjana not only begot 1,100 sons, but also 110 daughters. At the present moment, no one can produce such huge quantities of children. Instead, mankind is very busy checking the increase of population by contraceptive methods. We do not find in Vedic literatures that they ever used contraceptive methods, although they were beginning hundreds of children. Checking population by contraceptive method is another sinful activity, but in this age of Kali, people have become so sinful that they do not care for the resultant reaction of their sinful lives. King Puranjana lay down with his wife Puranjani and begot a large number of children. And there is no mention in these verses that he used contraceptive methods. According to the Vedic scriptures, the contraceptive method should be restraint in sex life. It is not that one should indulge in unrestricted sex life and avoid children by using some method to check pregnancy. If a man is in good consciousness, he consults with his religious wife, and as a result of this consultation with intelligence, one advances in his ability to estimate the value of life. In other words, if one is fortunate enough to have a good, conscientious wife, he can decide by mutual consultation that human life is meant for advancing Krishna consciousness and not for beginning a large number of children. Children are called parinama, or byproducts, and when one consults his good intelligence, he can see that his byproducts should be the expansion of his Krishna consciousness. Text 6. Again, tasyam vajanayat putran paranjanyam paranjana shatanye karasha virad ayushordam atat yagat. The great sage Narada then addressed King Prachini Barishat, a one whose lifespan is great, Virat. In this way, King Paranjana begot 1,100 sons within the womb of his wife, Paranjani. However, in this business, he passed away half of his lifespan. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutai, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane, Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Vracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskya Dhyade Satarane. Srila Prabhupada mentions a number of points in this verses. One of them is that previously people would beget a large number of children. At least we know that Dhritarashtra by some arrangement had produced 100 sons, but we don't find so often that a couple hundred sons were produced. Sometimes, but not always. In any case, they used to not be so much, they didn't avoid producing children. When Prabhupada was in New York in 22nd Avenue, and he asked the mothers of one of his disciples was visiting. He asked the mother, "When are you going to get your son married?" And she said, "When he can afford it." So Prabhupada was quite surprised. He was come to America. Before he came to America, he thought that the streets were lined with gold. When he came to America, he found out they were lined with garbage. In the winter, they were lined with snow, but they weren't lined with gold. But he understood that America, comparatively, was supposed to be one of the richest countries in the world in some kind of material wealth. But here, his mother is saying his disciple couldn't marry until he could afford to take care of a wife. But in India, even the poorest person we get married and have children. Prabhupada mentions that he would see on the street even one man who was driving a rickshaw, he was blind, and his wife was there also, kind of a rickshaw, but they were pulling things. And his wife was there also, and she was making sure he was clean and dressed and everything, and there's a little child there. So he was blind, his earnings was just pulling some kind of wheelbarrow, practically speaking. And he had a wife and child, and he was able to stay clean and eat and support his family. But in America, where you could collect bottles from the wastebasket, in America sometimes people do that, they collect bottles that people throw out, Pepsi Cola, Coca Cola, whatever it is. And they collect the cans, actually, usually it's the cans, from the trash. And they can make $30,000, $40,000 a year. There they can't afford a wife. In other words, we may conceive of material advancement and material wealth in some way, but if you can't even afford a wife and a child, then how wealthy are you? It means that people have a different conception of wealth nowadays. On the other hand, the question is, as Prabhupada mentions here, that instead of having a wife and child, it's not that they avoid sex life, but they use contraceptive methods in order to avoid children. In other words, children have become a disturbance in modern society, and if they can avoid them, then it's considered a great boon. On the other hand, in Vedic culture, children were considered a great asset. And if they could have them, it was considered a great boon. It was considered a great opulence to have children. And, of course, nowadays in modern society, people are a little mixed up because they don't know if they want children or they want to avoid children. Some people are trying to have abortions. Others are trying to go to the doctor and have some means by which they can produce children. Even they're trying to figure out how to make the sexes equal, they're trying to find out some way that men can have children also, so they don't feel bad. They don't feel there's an inequality. So therefore, modern society is quite confused and mixed up. They don't know who they are. They don't know what they're supposed to do. Because nete vidu swarta gatim hi vishnu, they don't know that the aim of life is to become Krishna conscious. They have no faith in God consciousness. They don't believe that there is a God. And even if they say officially that they believe in God, if you inquire what they believe in, it doesn't sound like our God, at least. It's some kind of sentimental, vague conception of some kind of something bigger than them, just like the clouds are bigger than them. So God is also a little bit bigger than they are. So they worship him. In spite of the fact that he doesn't have any face, he doesn't have any arms or legs or anything, actually they worship him probably because they feel more sorry for him than anything else. But they have no clear conception of what God is. And therefore they nite vidu swarta gatim hi vishnu durashaya durasha, they take shelter of something difficult. Durasha ye bar here artamanina. By here means outside, external. Artha means value. They take something insignificant. They take shelter of it. They absorb their consciousness in it and try to be happy with it. If one is not Krishna conscious, then the material nature takes over. In other words, if we're not under the internal energy, we must be under the external energy. And the external energy, there's really not that much going on. There's eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And unless we were under illusion, we wouldn't be very enthusiastic about eating, sleeping, mating, defending. So the material nature puts us under a spell, so we actually think we're going to be happy by eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Because if we really look at it, it wouldn't be so exciting. So therefore, Maya helps us not really look at it too closely, so we don't get too distracted by spiritual life and we become absorbed and hankering after material satisfaction. Otherwise, material life wouldn't go on very well. Generally in classes, you know, when the sannyasis or the brahmacharis may give class, they may describe, you know, or as even Rukmini describes to Krishna, when Rukmini was talking to Krishna and Krishna had more or less told Rukmini that somehow or another you got in a bad deal. You had all these wonderful kshatriyas, strong, wealthy, aristocratic, and you gave them up and you wound up with me. Me, no one even knows who I am. My followers are all poor. I was brought up by my father as a Vaishya, and I ran away and I became a kshatriya, so no one even knows what my caste is. I had all these girlfriends and I just abandoned them, and they're all crying even now. I went to Dwarka and I married all these wives, but I'm not even attached to any of them. So Krishna started to explain in a rather unique way his qualifications. And then Rukmini, in her refutation, said that, you know, how could I have accepted these personalities like Shishupal and others, Jarasandha, although they had come in order to take my hand, but who are they actually? They're just bags of stool, urine, pus and different things around, you know, covered by beards and all kinds of, anyhow, she wasn't described them in a very positive way. It wasn't very romantic. Ghastly rasa in the nectar of devotion. But that's the way things are actually are. I mean, if you take the skin away, it's not so attractive. Even the most attractive man or woman, the attraction can only be a fraction of some centimeters, because as soon as you take that skin away, then what's there? Not much to be attracted to. And if you even thought the skin was attractive, then if we gave you the skin after, you know, after taking all the skin away, you say, I don't like that very well. That looks disgusting. Okay, well, here's the skin you were so attracted to. Oh, take it away. But anyhow, luckily we're not, or unluckily, depends how you look at it, we're not in such clear consciousness all the time. Otherwise, material life wouldn't go on. And indeed, even great souls wouldn't be able to come into being, because no one would be interested in material existence. Therefore, Maya has provided an opportunity for some kind of attraction here. Even food, which seems quite innocent, if they describe to people exactly where the food came from, then most people couldn't eat their food, how it was prepared. You know, if you described who cooked the food and what his consciousness was when he was cooking the food, what he was thinking about, whether he washed his hands within the last week or not, and whether he used soap or not, the people would not be so attracted. It may look very good, because that's what people are looking for nowadays, is appearance. They're not looking for the substance as much. They take a look at the package and they can't even read what's on the package, but they think it sounds scientific, it must be good. It has all the chemicals in it, so it must be pretty healthy. And of course, sleeping sounds wonderful. You know, you become unconscious and you can have anything you wanted, in the dream at least. Everything you were missing out. In any case, if we go over eating, sleeping, and then of course mating and defending is glorified so much in these movies nowadays. The good guy is constantly killing people, that's why he's a good guy. And of course the people, when they die because they were killed by the good guy, therefore they don't really feel any inconvenience by dying from him. There's no pain or suffering, it's just they should feel honored. They got killed by the hero. So this is all illusion, and of course modern society has become expert at expanding illusions. That's their whole attempt. You have movies, people are not satisfied with just two dimension. Now they're very much absorbed in three dimension. The same illusion you could only see in two dimension, and previously only in black and white, and previous to that without even any sound, now they've advanced. Now you can see the illusion with sound, in color, in three dimension, and pretty soon you'll be able to touch the illusion. But after all, if you expand illusion, all you're doing is expanding, becoming more deeply involved in illusion. Although it may seem like this is a good illusion, you people have rejected the bad illusions, but we're into the good ones. So why is that? Because Krishna says, well, Gyanena tu tad agyanam yeshanashadam atmanah tesham adityavaj gyanam prakashiti tatparam. Windows. When, however, one is enlightened by the knowledge by which nations is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything, just like the sun lights up everything in the daytime. In other words, because people are under the spell of illusion or darkness, therefore they can't appreciate what the light can be like, why there could be any advantage of being in the light, because they're in the darkness. However you describe it to them, at least theoretically, it just sounds like another variety of illusion to them. They think Krishna is just another variety of illusion. These people, they claim that they're spiritual, but when we look at them, they're just a diminished materialist, side of the materialistic side. That there are, as they say, I forget who it was saying, that these people are all a bunch of beggars, that I'm a householder, they come to me, they claim that they're all spiritual and they're all superior to me. But when it comes time to eat, they come to my door and start begging. So in what way are they actually superior? They're all failures, materially speaking. And therefore, or as they said about Kulukshetra, who is the name of the devotee of Lord Chaitanya, who is living near the Jagannath temple, who's offering Ganji, Kolavekar Sridhar. As I said, he's a worshiper of this Vishnu or Krishna, but because he doesn't worship Durga, therefore he has living in this house without even any roof on it. And because he has no food, all night long, he's simply sitting there howling out of hunger pains. Of course, at night he was sitting there chanting Hare Krishna. But they interpreted it, he was simply howling there, sitting there howling out of hunger because he doesn't worship Durga. So that's how they're going to see things. And that may be how we see things also, unless we actually get absorbed in hearing about Krishna in a way that we appreciate. It's one thing to hear about Krishna and to think, why is it only one Krishna? There should be two, me and Krishna. Why should Krishna have all the gopis? He should share. He should be more generous. So unless one can hear with appreciation, one can't really hear. But if one hears with appreciation, then the result is that one will experience some higher taste. And according to Lord Chaitanya, Cheto Darpanam Arjanam Bhava Mahadevir Bhava Agni Davagni. So according to Cheto Darpanam Arjanam Bhava Mahadevir, how does that go again? Nirvapanam. Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam Vidyavadu Jivanam. So according to Lord Chaitanya, the Dava Agni, the blazing fire of material existence within our heart, becomes cooled when we actually gain association with Krishna by becoming conscious of his holy name. When we chant the holy name, he's actually present. Whether or not we're conscious or not of his presence, that will depend upon our attention. If we're distracted by material anxiety, thinking that I have so many plans I have to make now and here, or else I won't be able to successfully live out my day, or if we have no faith in the holy name, we think that somehow or another I vowed to chant these names, and because I'm a good person, I chant them, in spite of the fact they have no effect. Just like I can look around and see everyone else is sleeping, so because I'm superior to everyone else, I don't go to sleep. But I know they have no effect, so therefore I don't take it very seriously, like no one else here takes it seriously either. If we have no faith, that by chanting Hare Krishna with attention and feeling that we're going to gain anything superior, therefore we don't try to chant with attention, nor with feeling, because we don't really believe it's going to be any effort, any value to do it. But if we can actually chant with attention and with feeling and gain awareness of Krishna and feel the bliss of his association, that bliss puts out the blazing fire in the hearts of material desire. And therefore, eating, sleeping, mating, defending don't become as distracting. Anxiety goes down and our Krishna consciousness goes up. But on the other hand, children, at least in a normal society, are an asset. So even persons who are Krishna conscious, it is not that they avoid children, just like Nanda Maharaj, Mother Jasoda. When they had Krishna, they considered him an asset. They didn't think, how to get rid of this kid? he may have to grow up. If he doesn't get a scholarship, we may have to send, you know, what are we going to do with him? No, they were very happy to have Krishna because Krishna could go out and herd the cows, and they had a lot of cows. They knew he was an asset. He would do good for the family. And there was no economic problem. They had plenty of milk and yogurt. They had plenty of grains and food. They had everything that they needed. And therefore, children were not a burden. On the other hand, in a society where you have to spend $100,000 to bring up a child, and if you're only, you know, how many children can you have? Because you can't make that much. If everything is so expensive and you have no assets, really, all you have is debts, and you're just, you have to, everything is done by credit, then children become a great burden because all they'll do is ask you for things. They grow, they can't do much. All they can do is ask you for things. When they were little children, when I grew up, you know, it was little toy soldiers. Didn't cost very much. They were all made out of plastic. And nowadays, children are not satisfied with that. They need, you know, guns that look like the real gun, and they need video games and computers, and they need railroads. They need so many things. And they need it every day, something new. Because they're watching television, and television is brainwashing them that their whole life is just to ask their parents to get them this and get them that, get this other thing. And they're just, it's done in such a way that they capture the minds of the little children, and all they can do is hanker for these things day and night and bother their parents. So the parents have no choice but to give it to them in order to stay sane. So after a while, the parents think that this is ridiculous. I can hardly eat myself, and this kid is getting something useless, and we give it to him for a day, and then he destroys it and cries for something different. And since we have nothing else to do, we just put him before the television, which just creates all these desires within him. So people think, why do we need these kids for? They don't do anything but complain and hanker for things. Better to get rid of them. On the other hand, without Krishna consciousness, the senses simply grow stronger because people don't know what to eat or how to eat, and therefore everything they eat simply stimulates their senses more and more in every respect, from eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And therefore, it's not that they don't want eating, sleeping, mating, defending, but they don't want the results of it. And therefore they've come up with this thing called contraceptives. But of course contraceptives don't work, or people don't like them, and therefore they've come up with this idea of abortion. Just, it's not a child, it's not alive, you just kill it. Because if they thought it was alive and it was actually a child, then it would be murder. But that wouldn't fit into our plan because it made people feel guilty. They're causing some inconvenience to the mother by being there, so we give the mother the right to take away this unwanted, what do they call it? Unwanted tissue. So of course they reduce children to the status of a tissue. Just like you have a tissue, you blow your nose and you throw it away. So they become a tissue. You just throw it away when you like. Of course, with this mentality, as Kali Yuga advances, the old people will also be tissues. You reach a certain age and you can't make any more money, then you become a tissue. You may not feel like a tissue, but they've reduced you to a tissue. And therefore, as Kali Yuga advances, you'll be subjected to become a tissue by people's whims. If they don't like the way you look, you suddenly become a tissue. I make you a tissue. Biological tissue. but you're an unwanted biological tissue. You're an unloved biological tissue. So this is all due to, this is the illusion advancing into ignorance. People don't mind it when illusions in ignorance and passion, but by constantly being illusion and passion, eventually it winds up in ignorance. But actually, the illusion is supposed to be dissipated in the human form of life to advance towards goodness. And part of that is following the normal process by which eating, sleeping, mating, and everything else, and defending, is all done according to Vedic principles. So that wife and children are there, and wife and children are taken care of very nicely, and the husband is provided all the necessities also, so he can do his service, and at the same time there's some cultivation of higher consciousness, ultimately culminating in Krishna consciousness, so that as people are satisfied with their household life, they can see that the illusion, the best it can produce, is a nice relationship between everyone and the family, within the community, everyone, because the relationship is all becomes nicer and nicer because it's centered around the development of Krishna consciousness. That the family life itself is not in itself going to be satisfying, but what's satisfying is the development of relationships between the members of the family, and those relationships are aided and advanced by Krishna consciousness. It's not that Krishna consciousness is a distraction and it's an impediment towards our enjoyment, so we shouldn't, you know, waste our time chanting Hare Krishna and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, all this philosophy and Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. No, all the philosophy is about how to advance relationships, and the relationships are the basis of family life. And when the relationships are taken away, then all you have is sense gratification left. And now you're saying, I love you, but what you're really saying is, I'd like to eat you, but if I thought you taste good. But because I don't think you taste good, therefore I say I love you, because I'm trying to devalue and devour you and absorb you and control you in different ways. But that only lasts for some time. Just like if you're chewing bubble gum, there may be some sweetness in the beginning, but after a while, when the sugar goes out, you just wind up working your jaws. And the next reaction is to spit it out. So that's when relationships degrade into simply that of mutual sense gratification, then the result is only after some time the sweetness in that kind of relationship will extinguish, and the result is you'll simply have a piece of bubble gum that you'll eventually want to spit out. Therefore, the real sweetness is not in the sense gratification, it's in the development of relationships between all the members of the family. And that relationships can only be advanced when they're advanced in Krishna consciousness. Just like even the rituals in the Veda culture, they're just meant to help people show respect to each other and appreciation, because that's where the sweetness of the relationship comes from. Not from the ritual, but from the respect and appreciation. So at the beginning of a relationship, boy meets girl, and they're very respectful toward each other, because they know if I'm not respectful, they'll reject me. Therefore, they put on either a pretense or a duty, ritual, or whatever it is. They act very nicely towards each other. The man opens the door, whatever else. He picks up the handkerchief when the lady drops it. It's all very nice. The man's a gentleman and the lady's a lady. But when it degrades and they into sense gratification, then they just look at each other as objects of sense gratification, and after a while they become disgusted with each other because there's no higher consciousness. The conclusion is children, everything else, children, especially when they have some purpose, and that purpose, of course, is enhanced when there is some, just like we heard the other day, I think, where were we? I was in Spain, in Malaga, and we were driving to some place with one of my disciples, and some girl came to the door of the car asking for something, or some man actually came, and some donation. My disciple gave him a donation. Gypsies. In Spain there's a lot of gypsies. So anyhow, the comment was that actually the gypsies, they have around 9 children or 10 children because they're productive. They can put them on 9 different corners and they can beg. And they make a lot of money. So much so that one of my disciples said that he gave one of the gypsies some money, and then he saw the father of the gypsies drive into the car park to pick up the gypsies at the end of the day, and he had this huge car, this huge expensive car. So my disciple, he was driving around this old tin can. He was giving a donation to the gypsies. So he can drive around this huge luxury car. But the point is that he had 9 children. So he had 9 different persons making money. So he could afford a big car. So for them it's productive to have children. And in a normal society where there is where they grow food, then children are an asset. They can all go out in the fields and help plant the food, the food. If there is a vegetable garden, they can take out the weeds. They can help with the harvest. They can help the mother with the preparation of the food. They're all considered assets. There is plenty to go around, and by having more children, you get more. And as far as education, they didn't have to go to some university or whatever else. They learned how to do whatever their occupation was. And even if they went to higher education, it didn't cost that much. Sandi Pani Muni, his college wasn't very expensive. And the children, they all, you know, they earned their tuition by going out and doing things like collecting wood. It wasn't a high-tech society. But nowadays, by the time you're finished with education, you have to spend the next 10, 20 years of your life trying to pay back for it. You may not have learned anything. All you've learned is how to make money so you can pay back the college. And that's advancement. Anyhow, it was much... children were an asset. They had some conception of relationships, how to actually strengthen them and further them. And at the same time, they were developing their Krishna consciousness so the actual aim of life could be achieved while they were doing their activities, normal activities. And everyone supported, there was great support in every respect. There was experience from the elders, everyone lived together in harmony, comparatively, they knew what real material wealth and assets were, and they weren't running into the desert looking for some oasis in the middle of a desert. And therefore, at least Paranjana, he had 1,100 sons. And we'll find out he had 110 daughters, but he didn't feel it a great burden. He had plenty of assets. We'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Yeah. It wasn't all we see here is a waste of time. Well, time goes. Well, the city gets destroyed. Yeah. Well, that's the way things usually happen. Although, if you develop Krishna consciousness, just like we'll find out after, I guess, Paranjani. After Paranjan leaves, then the super soul comes. and gives her good intelligence. So it's not all a waste of time. Of course, this is an allegory that if we don't become Krishna conscious, then we do waste our time. And if we add Krishna consciousness to what we're doing, then it all becomes very productive. So whether we're Grihe Thakur, Vani Thakur, whatever we are, whether we're householders or brahmacharis or sannyasis, whatever we are, the important element is to add Krishna consciousness to it, and then it becomes very meaningful. And without that, it doesn't matter what we are, then it's just a waste of time. Shravam eva hi kevalam. But household life is just a more dramatic way of showing, because household, you know, if you're like in India at least, previously, if you were a sannyasi, a brahmachari, you could, comparatively, your life is quite simple. You can just go door to door, collect your food, and make a little, you know, a few chapatis, and that was it. You could space out for the whole day, and there was not much going on. But the householders, they couldn't space out. They had to work, they had to be productive, and they had to do a lot of things. But whether you were spaced out or did a lot of things, whether your name went down in history or you were forgotten within a short period of time, without Krishna consciousness, it was all a waste of time. Anything else? Yes. Well, I guess the solution is become Krishna conscious. Don't buy a television. You're going to get into a lot of problems. That television is going to cost you a lot more money than you thought it was going to cost you.
Sometimes even the parents, those are devotees, and they have a hard time taking care of them. They want to be the same people like the children and many things.
Yeah, I know. It's difficult, Kali Yuga. Become a sannyasi. It's a difficult life. Then, you know, yeah, that's one of the things. We're supposed to plan things out with our intelligence. So, if you, as Prabhupada mentions here, if you can't take care of the children, then the best contraceptive method is don't have sex life, because it's expensive. And if you do have, then you're going to have to, you know, take care of the children. And if you don't, if you think we're going to get rid of the children, it won't be a burden, then you'll find out in your next lifetime that's not the way things work. It's not that there are no laws of nature. You're going to have to get the reaction for it, and it won't be very pleasant. It'll be much more unpleasant than the sacrifice you wouldn't have made to take care of the children in the first place. So the Bhagavatam is trying to give us intelligence to understand how the material nature works, so we can avoid unpleasant circumstances. So it may seem unpleasant, but at some time or another, some point, we have to bite the bullet and tolerate and do our duty to everything that we're concerned with, whether it be our children or our wife or our husband or whatever, our friends. Or we're obligated. Once we take up a certain responsibility, we can't just put it aside and claim I've renounced it artificially. We're artificially going to renounce it in some way or another. We're going to have to take the consequences for it. So it's a big response. Life is a human life, especially, is a big responsibility, and education means to how to accept that responsibility. Yes. Yeah, as far as I can see, it's like that. That's what it says.
Also with Kali Yuga, but then when we speak about the relation of people, then I don't see really the point, because it has to be like that.
It doesn't have to be like that. It is like that. But it doesn't have to be like that for everyone. Just like during the rainy season, people get wet. But if you're fortunate, you can get an umbrella. And although it's the rainy season, you won't get wet. So how to adapt to the seasons, that's what the Vedic literature is about. Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's on us.
Yeah, the poor victims.
Well,
that's the way, you know, that is Kali Yuga. Just like birth, death, old age, and disease are imposed on us. So when we're growing old, we can say, it's being imposed on me. I'm a victim of old age, disease, and death. But that's the way things are. That's how the material nature works. In every yuga, it's like that. So here we only live for 100 years, and we grow old and die within 100 years. And in Satya Yuga, people could also complain, I'm a victim of old age, disease, and death. So it's like that throughout the whole universe. That's how the universe works. And when you came here, it was advertised, you know, just like you have a sign, don't enter. So Krishna put up a big sign, don't enter. Danger. And we said, who is this Krishna? Why should we listen? He thinks he's God all the time. He's going to tell everyone what to do. So it says, don't enter. Everyone follow me. Into. So we did it. We're all here. And Krishna was right. But we don't want to admit it because that would mean that he was God. So we're here suffering and then complaining. You know, if there was a God, why did he do this to us? He didn't do it. He told us not to come here. But we did it anyhow. And he's telling us, get out of here. And we think, why is he so puffed up to always telling me what to do? So who's to blame? It's the way things are here. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.